Welcome to our Clojure introduction workshop. We will all hopefully successfully build the game of life in Clojure. The workshop will be 2 hours. We plan to spend the first half hour introducing some very basically do a pattern matching stuff. So I hope that every one of you has programmed in at least one other language. Otherwise, this might be a little bit too much. We will do a very quick pattern matching kind of style where you get thrown into the cold water and have to swim on your own kind of workshop. I hope that every one of you has forked this project and installed it on your local machine. If not, please do so, or pair up with someone who has, so you can both do the project. Hopefully you're set up. The game of life is a very simple problem domain. It's a two-dimensional field where a set of rules is applied to. In this two-dimensional field, you have cells, and these cells might be dead or alive. And here are the three rules that determine if each cell stays alive or dies. Basically, or any living cell with fewer than two living neighbors dies because of underproduction. Any living cell with two or more, two or three neighbors, lives on to the next generation. And any cell with more than three life neighbors dies of overcrowding. And if any dead cell has exactly three neighbors, it becomes alive again. So you have this fluctuation of states, and over time, patterns appear. So when your implementation is correct, you will see some of these patterns in your resulting world. So now TJ will give a little explanation on the general syntax of Lisp and Clojure. So, because we had the experience that some get confused because your brains are trained to see like syntax. So, take it away.
Yes. So we've offered this workshop twice before, and of course we're very, we're all very curious. Did people enjoy the workshop? Did they get anything out of it? And one common feedback is that they felt disoriented while working in Clojure.
And so that feeling of disorientation when working in Clojure is something we want to avoid, because of course we want this to be hopefully a liberating experience rather than just one more thing you do for your job or because you feel like you have to. So let's look at the idea. Let's go all the way back to what notation is for, what symbolic notation is, and perhaps later you might even be curious to look at the history of it. I haven't looked very closely, but I think it's a very interesting topic. It's a human invention. That here, this first thing, foo a comma 1, calling the function foo on these two parameters. Now, I think most of us here, perhaps all of us, first learned this sort of way of representing these concepts. And it offloads, the idea of being able to just understand that at a glance offloads a lot of work onto perhaps our visual parts of our brain or whatever it is that pre-computes that for us so that we can think about the higher level concepts that we want to really solve, to explore. This thing, however, you would think that the two actually are quite similar. Rather than the parentheses being here, there's one over here at the beginning, and maybe just a couple of other little punctuation. But yet, most of us have trained our brains through time to be too narrow to really get this at a glance. You have to still think about it. It doesn't feel like it's flying. It's more like you're still running through water or something. So one thing we get from the symbolic notation, this invention of symbolic notation, which probably came, I don't know, in the 17th century, I really don't know, but is that, so yes, we have the one aspect of uploading, offloading that visual computation, that computation onto our visual parts. Also, in terms of manipulation, that you can easily imagine just switching these two things around, having the second thing be A and the first thing be 1. Now, I would like to offer that perhaps you might like to learn this second one to train your brain to go through that a little bit, because perhaps it's better. It may give you more of an intuitive sense of this idea, because the way I think about it, when I delete parts of it, I see these as items, foo, A, 1, a list of three things. I see this parentheses as like a container. These parentheses are a container around whatever is in here. That's, I think, a very strong mental representation that touches upon the sort of manual, kinesthetic way of manipulating things. Because in the real world, we do put things in containers. We do often have things that are sequential like that. And so we could go into the history. I was actually thinking of just going on and talking more about this. You can make a big talk about this. But in any case, I just want to offer that one goal of this workshop, maybe not just to be may not just be to implement the thing, you know, this game, but maybe another kind of game you could play is to just get yourself acquainted with manipulating things in this way and seeing what results from it. And that could be another focus of this workshop that might be in a game of it, of itself. Okay. Back to Waldemar.
Thank you. In this project, you will find two files. Or you'll find more than two files, but you will find a pattern page 1, which is the that are blinds. Okay. Yeah, so since this is just 2 hours, we can't explain what the details of closure. So our idea is to just go through some patterns, get used to this different notation, get used to think in different ways a little bit, and basically then let you go with this knowledge and try it on your own. Invert colors. Oops. You want me to invert? Oh, okay. Any suggestions? Desert. okay. Morning. This is better? Okay. So we will go through all the usual stuff, how is the variable defined, what are the data structures, how do I manipulate them, and then you're free to go. Obviously each programming language has variables. Clojure has something like this too. You define a variable by, what's this? I'm afraid I've... Hopefully this will stay on. You define one by using def, and notice that this parentheses will follow you everywhere. And what they're saying is the first thing is something that Clojure can execute, and everything else is arguments. So you can think of this very similar to, if you stay on this level, it's very similar to this. On this level, it's just I move the parentheses to the left. So yeah, if you want to define a variable, you use def, give it a name, and it's the closure way to use dashes for connection, not underscores, not kernel case. And then you give it a value. And values might be a string with which you create with double quotes, might be a simple number, might be some float, and might be a ratio. In Clojure, you have ratios. They don't lose precision by arithmetic operations. So this will be precise, and if you divide this by something else, it will give you a new ratio and do all the math things. If you want to use a collection of some sort, one way to do so is to use a vector. And Clojure has literals for vectors, which are this square brackets. In Clojure, you don't have to use commas. You can just separate them by spaces. Now, if you have defined some collection, you obviously want to access it. And so if you want to have the first parameter, what you do is you apply the first function, give it a vector as an argument or any other collection that you might have, and it will give you the first value. While not changing the original data. Same is true for last, which will give you the last value. And if you need to be more flexible, you can use nth. That will give you the value in that collection at index 1 in this case. Like I said, you don't have to use commas. In fact, commas are white spaces in Clojure, so they are completely ignored. Defining a vector like this will result in a vector that contains the values 1, 2, and 3. You use commas to separate things visually when you feel the need for it. Catching stuff or extracting stuff from collections is one thing. You actually want to manipulate them too. So in Clojure, everything is immutable, which is to say you can't change it. So what do you do if you want to actually put something in somewhere or get something out of something and have the rest of it? You apply a function that returns you a new value of changed in some way. So const is one of those functions. And it will take the new value that should go into some kind of collection. And the second argument is the collection it should go into. And then it will return another collection, in this case, a list containing both the keyword A and the original contact 2 or 3. Now notice that the original vector isn't changed. You get a completely new value out of this. And you don't have to be scared. Everything is implemented nicely and intelligently, so you don't lose space. It will not copy the complete content to a new space in RAM and duplicate your data. If you have one vector with 1 million entries and you add one, it will only consume space for this additional value. The creator of this language spends some time, a huge chunk of this time, implementing this data structure. So no worries there. Conj is just basically a different, does the same thing with changed arguments. So you might be in a situation where your argument, where this fits your needs better just to have those things changed. Now, if you have data structures that are accessed by some kind of key, let's say a vector can be accessed by a specific index, then you can use SOC to replace stuff. So here we just added things to a collection. Here we replace stuff in a collection. what this is saying is, okay, giving a vector containing 1 and 2, at the index 0, please put instead the keyword A there. And it will return a new vector containing A instead of 1. Now, this also doesn't change the original vector you gave it. It will keep that and return a new thing that you can work with. Now, so far we only had collections. Another really useful data structure is map. In Clojure, you define your map by using curly brackets. As in this case, I use a keyword as a key, but since everything is immutable, you can use everything as a key. Another map, another collection, it doesn't care. So you're not confined in any way. The value is, as well, any kind of data structure or value you may choose. Come again, please. Yeah, it's content based, so it's not looking on where it's stored in memory. It just looks at what's in there. So if you define a map. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. If you have two strings that have the same content, they are considered equal. They're not considered different just because they're on different addresses. So if you, let's say, you use this as a key and store A in there, and then you say have defined something that is of the same value, and then you would access that, this would return A to you because the content is the same. Thank you for the question. So this is just another example which puts a vector as a value. Now that you have a map, you want to access values based on keys, and you can do this by using the get function. Give it any map and anything that's a key in that map. Or you can, if you use keywords, they are actually functions themselves. So you can use the keyword itself and pass it a map, and it will return the value. Strictly speaking, this is the keyword being a function and looking itself up in a map. But this is basically just for convenience. And it's also the other way around. A map is also a function that you might give something that will look up then. Now, in some case, you might want to use default values. And you can use get supports that by just adding a third parameter. And the same is true for the other two ways of doing things. And yeah, there's all kinds of access stuff. So the keys function will return you a list of all the keys used in that map. The values function will return you all the values used in that map. ASOC is implemented for different data structures, as I said. So it's also implemented for maps. So syntax is you use the ASOC function, give it a map, something that's a key, and the new value you want to assign to that key. Now, Clojure does not have really special, operators that uses differently. So plus is also just a function, and it's applied like every other function. There's no exception in Clojure for this. So you use the prefix notation. So some of you might know the Polish notation of of math, this is basically what it boils down to. And we all know that pluses, we use plus with two arguments all the time. So this might look a little weird at first. But what this says is, okay, please apply the plus function with two arguments, one and two. But since I'm not, it's not arbitrary how to resolve operator priorities anymore, because you just have the parentheses, plus is also defined on many, or an arbitrary list or flexible list of arguments. So what if you, or functions are first class citizens, so you can pass them around and reassign them. So what we do here is, I don't know, for some reason we don't like plus. It's too short for us. We want to name it funny plus. So or sum. Then we could just do this. What we're doing here is we define a variable that's called funny plus, in this case. Sum might be a better name for it. And assign it the same value plus has. And plus is a function. So when I do this, it will actually use the same function object and pass it the arguments 1 and 2, and it will be just a simple plus. So you can take functions and pass them around arguments to anything you come up with. Because you can also do bad stuff and redefine minus being plus. So no one really, I don't know, will stop you, but just it's possible. What? If plus is defined for big numbers, yes. Yeah. Yeah, the argument was, or the statement was, that you can, if you write some kind of math library and you have to handle special things, you might want to basically replace the old plus with a new plus that is more intelligent. So now we talked about a little bit about functions. So you want to basically write your own function now. How do you do that? You use defn. Give it a name, and then a vector of arguments you assume, and then you can execute stuff. Give it lists or call functions, and this explicitly returns the last value. So this will just add those two arguments, and you call it the same way you call every other function. You just open a list, let the function be the first argument, and then every other argument follows it. Printing is done by using println, and you can give it arbitrary arguments. So what if you're in a function definition and want to remember stuff, want to use local scoped variables? You use the let for this, and it takes a vector of pairs, basically. So now you could put a comma in here if you feel more comfortable reading it this way, because it's always assuming an equal number of arguments, and it will assign the value of the second to the name of the first. So from here on out, user is defined as or contains the value username, and result contains the value true. Yeah, and let as everything else will just return the last value. So we are going to write something that's usually that's using a two-dimensional world. So you have x and y coordinates and a lot, and sometimes you need to access them. You have to take this two-dimensional vector apart, and Clojure has something that comes in handy, which is called destructuring. So what this function basically says is, okay, I'm a function called getElement, and I take one argument, which is a vector, and I know that this vector will contain two values. And I want to name them x and y, because I know that I want to access the content of that argument specifically. So now your code gets much easier to read, because you can use x and y directly. What we're doing here is we have this world, which is a two-dimensional data structure, basically. We have one vector that contains two and other vectors. And we use this extracted y argument value to extract the line. And then we get either this or that vector out of it. And then we use the second argument to extract the value from that vector. So if we define a position being a vector with the values 1 and 1, and we call getElement on it, we will get this value, 3. You can use destructuring not only for vectors, but also for maps. And this looks a little bit different. You say, OK, I have this function, electUser, which takes one argument, which is supposed to be a map. And this map has to have the key name. And I want to remember this from here on out as the username. And then you can do your computation or your logic in this. So applying this to a map with both an ID key and a name key will successfully extract the name. Now, if you want to manipulate, if you want to apply one function to each element of some kind of collection, you can use map. And map takes a function to apply. In this case, it's the increment function, which will take any argument and increment it by one. And it's applied to a vector containing the values 1, 2, and 3. And yeah, it will then apply this to every element, so we get 2, 3, and 4 back. So this is a predefined function. You just pass it in. If you have stuff you want to make up on the fly and you don't want to define a function for this because you know you only use it once, there's another way to define a function, an anonymous function. It's called fn, and it has this, it's very similar to deffn by only lacking the name, because you don't have to name this function. And here we have redefining a function that takes one argument, the x in this case, does the same thing basically, and so we get the same result. There's all kinds of stuff that apply to each element of some collection. So you have filter, which will reject elements for you, so you can, I don't know, have some arbitrary logic that discards things. Or that has to be true for things, so they stay in the new and the return result. Here we apply the even function, and it's also common closure to use question marks for functions that return true or false. We apply this to this vector, and we get only the even values back. And with everything else, you can just pass it some function, and even create an anonymous function on the fly. Now, sometimes you need to reduce a collection of stuff back to one value, and that's what reduce does. You give it a function that has to work on two arguments. The first will be the aggregate, this thing that's supposedly returned from everything else, and then a collection. So what this will do is it will apply plus to the values 1 and 2, remember that value, apply this value again, and pass the 3 as the next argument. So 1 and 2 will result in 3, the next call to plus will be 3 and 3, and we'll return at 6. So sometimes 4 might be a nicer syntax. 4 takes a vector of pairs again. So if you want to do something else, you would have to give it 2 new arguments. And what it will do is it will let the user take the values of, in this case, itchy and scratchy in turns. So running this will return a list of results. So whatever is written in here gets applied for each value user gets assigned to. So in our case, we get 2 sentences back. It's itchy for president and scratchy for president. You can also give it a keyword, which is when, and in this case, you can skip specific iterations. So if you want to, I don't know, go through the coordinates -1, 0, and +1, but you don't actually want to do the -1, then you can say, okay, when user isn't 0, something like this. This might come in handy when you do this two-dimensional thingy where you have to deal with coordinates. So here's a more domain-focused example. We have iterate between x being 0 and 1 and y being 0 and 1, and this will create for us all possible combinations. So x being 0 and y being 1 and 0 is one iteration, or this will generate 4 iterations and return. Yeah, if you put the results in a vector, you see that we get all the possible combinations back. 0 and 1, 0 and 0, 1, 0, and 1, 1. So iterating and manipulating stuff isn't all. Sometimes you do have to branch out, do different stuff based on different results. And now this might look a little bit strange coming from C-like languages, where if is something special. In Clojure, if is basically a function, if you will, that takes 3 arguments. The first one is something that evaluates the true or false. The second one is the function to be executed if this first argument is true. And the other function is something that's to be executed if this is false. So by using this brackets and having the first thing being a function, it's actually quite powerful because you don't have to, on if doesn't need to be included in the language itself. You can basically build your own control structures in the aftermath. And since we have prefix notation, we also have condition or things that check for many values. So if you have an or, it basically behaves like an any in other languages, and the same is true for AND. It also accepts many arguments. Now, if you have something like an if, like I said, it takes 3 arguments. So what if you want to do more than one thing in the true case? Then you can use do to group things together. And since it's a functional programming language, what you want to do is you want to write pure functions. Pure functions are functions that take in a value, do some computation, and return some other value. They don't do any side effects. Printing something out is a side effect. You do this on the side, basically. It has nothing to do with the end result. But sometimes you have to do this. And Clojure comes with this do function that lets you put different stuff in it. And every time you see a do, you in your head, it says, okay, there has to be some side effect here, so I have to be careful. But maybe sometimes you want to explicitly have side effects. Sometimes you don't get passed in some collection and just operate in that collection. Sometimes, I don't know, have to query database for each item of that or do something in the other world or lock something out. And in that case, you can use doSeek. It has the same setup like a for, but it will return nil, which is the null value in Clojure. And it explicitly states that, okay, I want to have some kind of collection, and for each element of that, I want to do some side effect. That's a lot. and I don't... Oops. I don't expect you to have memorized everything. It's just this is in the project file, so I hope this was like a first impression of things. And if you check out this project, you want to start work on this core CLJ file, which is located in source Clojure intro workshop core CLJ. And you can ignore this for the start now. It comes with some things predefined. So you have a function that will create a world given a width and a height. It will create a blinker figure for you in will create a world that contains a blinker. So if you want to check your code, if it's working, you can just create a blinker world and see if it blinks. If you're feeling fancy, you can also create a glider, which looks a little bit nicer and glides through your world. And we have many helper functions set up. So if you want to have the width of a world or the height, you can use them or extract a specific element at some coordinates. We also have a pretty print world version where you can pass it in your world that you're currently having and it print it to your console. This is basically an alias. This is boiler something we need to do to make this work. And this is basically where you're going to start. This update world function wants to be implemented. It gets passed some kind of world, which is a vector of vectors containing zeros and ones. And your task is to implement the game of life rules and return a new world that is a valid state or valid follow-up state based on the world you're given. Its dummy implementation just creates a new world, which is randomly populated. So if you, we also have a simulation and we have rendering. So by running start rendering, you will get some GUI that shows stuff. And this only shows one state of the world. So if you want to, I don't know, you do three iterations or you do one iteration and you want to see the new state, you can... Hello? I'm sorry. Okay. We have helper functions for that. So if you have a world at hand, you can call display world. You can also start the simulation, give it some world to start, and it will go through it. And if you want it to stop, you can call stop simulation. Now, if you have this checked out, you can run Leiningen REPL, and it will give you an interactive environment. It's a JVM, it takes a little bit. And it will take you to the Clojure Intro Workshop core namespace, which is this file. So if you now run some of the code, let's say we want to create a blinker, we will get a vector of vectors. If we, let's say we want to start the rendering, we just call the start rendering function. And we get a little thingy that shows us a world. Now, let's say we want to display a world, and we want to that world should create. And do we want to create? Let's create a glider. And yeah, so here's our new world showing a glider. And if we would if we would start a simulation now, let me quickly check what start simulation needs. Yeah, it would need to pass it the world, so we will create a new glider, start a simulation. And since our update world just randomly creates new worlds, this is what we get. And if we now change our update world, where is it? Okay. If we would say, okay, our world should only, return a create blinker instead. So we'll just copy this lines, pass them here, and now we have redefined our update world function. And we see that it constantly returns a world that contains an initial state for a blinker. And since we don't implement the rules, it isn't blinking. So this is where you go, where you jump in and start your work on creating something that's working. And we will go around and help you the best we can. Do you have any questions? It's working. Okay, great. Now you can go around and teach others too. Yeah, so that's it for the presentation part. Happy hacking.